Good evening, good evening. This is Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Rally. It used to be called Radio. I think I'm having a bit of a blowback flashback, but we're here on the Friday Night Live on the 24th. Well, the 24th year of the new millennium, and that would be July the 5th. Summer is sprinting by. Of course, I owe everyone here a rabid, massive, large apology, and the apology is... Sorry, I've had so many technical screw-ups lately. I actually had to... the computer's like, hey, do you want to reboot? And I'm like, sure. And apparently that just means it has to reboot 19 times. It basically rebooted all the way back in generations to the construction of the pyramids. But anyway, so sorry for the technical issues that have been occurring recently. We've had lockups, machine freezes, slow, chunky, blah, blah, blah. So I hired a technical specialist to come in and... Sort it all out, I do believe it is. So the only rebooting that will be happening is me. There, I did it. Just right there, right then, right now. So, of course, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, but let me get started with, hey, have you, was there a little bit of a dip in the old itty-bitty-ditty coins? Do I have that right? Was there... Hang on, let me check. I could be wrong. I think there was a little bit of a hiccup. Was there? Let me just check the price history. This is all in Canadian coins. Where are we? Let's go with those guys. All right. So what's happening? Well... It seems to be down a smidge. Let's have a look at the 5 days. Yeah, 87 down to 77. It's dropped about 10 large. And of course, it was not more than a month ago that it was at 97. So that would be over 20%. So I think that could technically or categorically be categorized as a hiccup, right? Now, of course, if you haven't been around the Bitcoin universe of bipolar lithium-based, then, of course, this feels like a big deal. Let me tell you, in my humble opinion, it's not a big deal. It doesn't really matter. I just find it interesting. I'm like, oh, it's down a little bit. Okay, you don't need this crypto. So, yes, it is. It just took a little bit of a, little bit of a dip. And... So yes, there is a discount. And would you hit me with a why if you'd like me to delve into a smidge or two of the reasons why? Why, oh why, oh why are we doing just a little bit here, there, and everywhere? Now, of course, if people are upset about, let's say, 20% deflation in Bitcoin, which I guess would correspond to about a 25% increase the other way around, then have you seen this trend of people who go back to their own Costco or Walmart or Amazon? You know how they keep the cart and it says, you know, you had these 30 items and it was $90 like 2 or 3 years ago. And then they just reorder all of those things and it's like $160. And it's like they're just the real inflation, right? So. That's compared to what, right? Oh my gosh, it's had a dip. Well, it hasn't had a 50% dip, which fiat has had in some areas, in a lot of areas, really. Yes, the UK has voted itself into oblivion. There really doesn't seem to be any chance. I mean, it was 14 years of conservative rule and they didn't do smack about the fundamental issues in the country. So... Why not go accelerationist, which is what they seem to be doing? So, what was it? Reform got 14% of the vote and 1% of the seats. It's a fantastic system. That's a fantastic, fantastic system. Good job, everybody. I don't know if the bottom is in, but no, it's not because the UK is toast, although it is. What was the biggest gift to the UK has been a variety of Independence Day celebrations around the world. That seems to have been the biggest gift. But it's just amazing, you know? Same people But you go back 150 years, it's a whole different planet. It's a whole different planet. All right. Nobody knows why the price is doing what it's doing. I certainly don't, and I'm no expert, so take all of this with a grain of salt. None of this is investment advice. Do your own research, make your own decisions. Listen to nothing of what I say with any seriousness, but, the Germans! So what is going on? Possible, right? So the German government has transferred $122 million worth of Bitcoin to crypto exchanges. So the German government has, it's not the first time they've liquidated things, but they are liquidating their seized assets. So there is, of course, the idea that the government is going to sell seized Bitcoin. We've seen this before with some of the Silk Road stuff. So the government's going to sell. And so that's a pressure down, right? That's a pressure down on price as a whole, right? Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Take me to the bridge. Take me to the mat. So there's that aspect of things. MT Gox. Empty. See, remember how it turned out that the wallets were empty and it was called MT or Mt. Gox. Creditor repayments. So this is from Yashu Gola from Cointelegraph. Today's Bitcoin price decline is further exacerbated by signs that MT Gox is moving closer to reimbursing its creditors with over 140,000 Bitcoin worth approximately $8.5 billion. This expected influx of Bitcoin into the market has caused concern among investors about potential sell-offs. So, the really important fact in reality, in my humble opinion, the takeaway from all of this is it ain't the fault of crypto that government sees shit and people put crypto in shaky and shady and unstable and eventually what could be considered massively fraudulent exchanges. Crypto is not, in my humble opinion, is not designed for exchanges. Not your keys, not your coins. Putting your shit on crypto is like having an open marriage. The vows are monogamy, not exchanges. I mean, I guess you got to sell some or whatever, right? But you know what I mean. So Bitcoin is not supposed to be controlled by governments, and the government in Germany has a lot of control over, because close to 200 million worth of Bitcoin, I think that's US. And MT Gox, of course, was supposed to be regulated, it was supposed to be protected, and not your keys, not your coins. So that's not at all in the spirit of crypto. And you have to understand, in general, the only reason for exchanges is because of us white fiat currency still being required to buy shit and in particular pay your taxes. So that's why the exchanges exist, as Bitcoin in particular takes its rightful place as the nine-headed lion god of the crypto world. Exchanges will become much less important because you can just buy shit straight from your own wallet. So that seems important. So, fears of selling pressure from MT Gox repayments, potential miner sales have led to a significant drop in Bitcoin's price. Other major cryptocurrencies such as Ether and Solana's SOL. Quote, fears of looming selling pressures on Bitcoin from defunct exchange MT Gox and possible miner sales pushed the largest cryptocurrency to under 59,000 on Thursday. Thank God AI is scooping up all of the video cards so that it's more expensive to mine, which raises the value of Bitcoin. So let's see here. The defunct exchange MT Gox is set to begin distributing assets stolen in a 2014 hack this July after multiple delays. These repayments will be made in Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, adding to the selling pressure. MT Gox will start distributing assets stolen from clients in a 2014 hack in July 2024 after years of postponed deadlines. Yeah, it's just kind of tough that it took this long, right? So let's go back to 2014. I don't know. What do we got here? 2014. Yeah, so 2014. I'm sorry. This is so funny for me. And I, you know, I understand the emotions, right? I really do understand the emotions. But in 2014, do I have that right? Yeah. So 2014, what was the price of Bitcoin in 2014? What was the price of Bitcoin in 2014? What was the price of Bitcoin in 2014? What does your mug say? It says, just give me the coffee and no one gets hurt. So, a couple of $100. Canadian, like $300-$400, $500, whatever, right? So here's the funny thing, right? So let's just go and say the sell-off started at 87, right? So let's say it was 87,000 divided by, I mean, it's not ideal. Yeah. So what happened was back in the day, this is, what was it? Was it somebody in Singapore or something was recently, or in the 20th century, was asked about the, what do you think are the effects of the French Revolution? And he said, it's too soon to tell. He probably didn't shake his fist and say it that dramatically, but he said, it's too soon to sell. But here's the funny thing. So when Empty Gox started pushing up the daisies, joined the choir invisible, and went tits up to infinity, everybody was like, they took my Bitcoin! I stole it from! It's the worst thing in the known universe. And that certainly is one way to put it, and I'm certainly not defending any shady dealings at Empty Gox, but here's the funny thing. Here's the funny, funny thing. It's forced hodling that has resulted in a 217.5 multiple of the value that was lost. So what it did was remove temptation to sell from people who otherwise probably would have sold. So you think, oh my gosh, the Bitcoin is stolen. It's gone. It's evaporated. It's the worst thing in the known universe. And then when you come back, you've made 217, not percent, times. We should all be so lucky to have a thief take something from us and return it 217 times more valuable. 10 years ago, it is true that I stole your Lada, but I have returned a gold-plated Bugatti with Margot Robbie in the trunk, right? So isn't that kind of funny? It is a little bit of a plot twist. How do you know it's bad? This is always a challenging thing, right? How do you know it's bad? How do you know it's bad? So, yeah. Involuntary hodling. I just hope people understand and appreciate how the universe completely messes with your head from time to time. And by from time to time, I mean on a regular basis. How the universe messes with your head on a regular basis. And that which you think is terrible is the greatest thing ever. And that which you think is the greatest thing ever can turn out to be completely terrible. So just a thought, an idea, a memory. So yes, just something to think about in life. It's too soon to tell. Sometimes. Too soon to tell. Sometimes. All right. So, trading firm QCP Capital anticipates a subdued market in the upcoming quarter, mainly due to uncertainty surrounding the Bitcoin supply that will be released from the Empty Gox. Quote, we anticipate a subdued Q3 for Bitcoin as the market remains uncertain around supply Empty Gox releases. Can you believe there are still vainglorious clusterfuck a-holes who literally mime having a freaking clue about the future price of anything, let alone crypto?
Oh my God.
Oh, my God.
You don't need the hassle.
It's wild. It's absolutely wild that there are people out there with a straight face say, we anticipate this particular movement in a massive geopolitical war-based upturned economy with, it seems, the guy in El Salvador trying to rewrite the entire central bank around Bitcoin and Javier Milei doing some pretty amazing things in Argentina. But, you know, they don't predict. I mean, nobody knows. God, it's embarrassing to me. It's embarrassing to me. I would sooner take 100-year global warming predictions than price of crypto in 3.5 fucking minutes from now. It's just wild to me that people say this stuff with a straight face. There is uncertainty. Yes, it's called the future. That's called free will. Of course there's uncertainty. Things will happen. Could be good. These things appear to be bad. And it's like, oh, so I think the general theory is, that somehow, somehow, you see, it's really bad that Bitcoin is moving from government hands to private hands. You know, diamond hands in the government hands means diamond drilling through your nads. Private hands means people who understand Bitcoin are willing to buy it and probably hold it for the long term. So, it's been taken from the hands of government and put into the hands of private, free citizens. And people are like, oh no. Oh no. The slaves are freed. Bitcoin is liberated from the state. And people are like, this is the worst thing. The price is going down. Oh my gosh. Isn't that funny? Oh my gosh. MT Gox was a huge overhang for many years, but knowing that is going to disappear in July, I think it's reason to expect a pretty sharp rebound in the second half. Sure, we anticipate, we suspect, we expect. I've ripped open a goat, spread its intestines around the floor, and it spelled out the name of my mother's middle toe. So there it is. It's science. It's science. Oh my gosh. Social media has seen a surge in discussions encouraging buying during the dip. However, Kudret of GCM Investments suggests caution, predicting potential future declines to the $48,000 to $50,000 range. Okay, here's a fact, right? This is a basic fact. The basic fact. Look, anybody who genuinely believes they know the future price of crypto will keep it so far from themselves you could not find it with a squid tentacle, a doctor, and a flashlight up your ass. You just couldn't. Like, they would keep that so close to their chest that it would be buried deep in the left ventricle. They would bury it, pave it over, cover it up, grow trees on it, and seed it from space. Anybody who genuinely believes that they know what the price of crypto is going to be, I mean, you can make an absolute fortune if you know what the price of crypto is going to be in 5 minutes, which nobody does. So I personally, my personal opinion, nobody knows the future price of anything. And anybody who says that they do is full of absolute shit, unless they're directly involved in regulating it, in which case, well, they can make a shit ton of money. So, all these people. I've had friends who are like, oh, but they say this. And I'm like, but they don't say it. I've literally worked in a trading company. I've literally programmed this stuff. They don't. It's all, I'm not talking about any of these individuals, just in general. It is just fear, uncertainty, doubt, price mongering, covering your positions, having some stuff to say to make. But anybody who says they know the price of a volatile asset during a time of massive economic dislocation. Met with an old friend of mine last night who's into AI, and we had quite the discussion. It is his view that we're going to end up like Planet of the Apes ruled by AI, and he knows a lot more about it than I do. The idea that, well, you see, this quarter, right, the July, August, September,
Yes, my view is that X, well, Y, or Z is going to happen. You see all these people with their candles and their chats and shit. Oh, my, you don't know. You don't know. And stop lying and say that you do. It bothers me enormously. It bothers me at a fundamental philosophical level because it's saying that there's no free will. Saying that you know the future prices stuff is fundamentally offensive because it is a thumb in the all-seeing Sauron eye of free will. Nobody knows. There are too many variables. And there are variables that by their very nature are unknown. There are variables that are there, that by their very nature are unknown and unknowable because of free will. So it drives me quite batty, and this is why I don't dip into these kinds of predictions very much. It drives me quite batty. June 26th, the U.S. government transferred almost 4,000 Bitcoin to Coinbase Prime, a platform tailored for institutional trading. The Bitcoins were initially seized from Banmet Singh, a convicted drug trafficker. Singh was arrested in London in 2019 for distribution charges and was extradited to the U.S. in 2023. From his convictions, he forfeited over 8,100 Bitcoin, valued at about $150 million at that time. The recent transfer represents only a small portion of the U.S. government's total Bitcoin assets. Currently, the government holds approximately 214,000 Bitcoin, which is valued at over $13 billion, making it the world's largest national holder of Bitcoin. Boy, in my view, you hold on to those Bitcoin enough, you can completely eliminate the national debt and a good portion of the unfunded liabilities. A significant amount of the government's Bitcoin's holdings originated from seizures related to criminal activities, including those from the dark web marketplace Silk Road and the Bitfinex hack in 2016. Quick question, just out of curiosity. Oh, quick question. How often do you get emails where they say, shit, sorry, man, we lost your data. You know, we're taking some steps. We informed some people. You're fucked. I don't know. Just weird. The U.S. still retains the majority of its seized Bitcoins. Yeah, well. So other questions, crypto pragmatist on X says, just an opinion, MT Gox distribution, the German government sells Bitcoin and the U.S. government moves Bitcoin. These reasons that led to the Bitcoin price drop are not essential. They're just noise and will eventually end.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, what is it? Essential. Define essential. What is essential? What is noise? Anyway, this has been repeated in the past and will be repeated in the future. A series of negative news stories and expectations of falling prices. After a short period, all of this will end and prices will return to their normal level. It is not, for example, legislation, a law, or a global catastrophe that affects Bitcoin's prices for a long time. Yeah. Yeah. As Bitcoin dipped below 57K, this was as of 11 a.m. yesterday, July 4th, as Bitcoin dipped below 57K, about 305.43 million was liquidated across crypto derivatives exchanges. Notably, this included a substantial amount of Bitcoin long positions contributing to the market's downward pressure. So you know how this goes, right? So people have their positions and they want to minimize losses when the price goes down, right? And so they have stop loss measures where if the price goes down a certain amount, there's an immediate flash sale, which causes the price to go down even further, which causes more stop losses, which causes, so you understand. And then people have a programmed, well, if it gets down to this price, start buying, which is why it goes down, it bounces, starts to go back up again. So, right. Yeah, everybody can see these, right? Ned Rorty from Stocklytics. Rorty highlights the impact of potential large volume sellers on the market. German government, MT Gox bankruptcy. He warned, should an additional 200,000 Bitcoin valued at more than $10 billion hit markets in a short space of time, supply will likely outstrip demand. And we could see the price of Bitcoin drop even further. This is amazing. I'm getting a face tan and my eyes are turning from blue to kaleidoscopic because of the absolute brilliance of one N. Rorty from Stocklytics saying, you know, all other things being equal, in a market where there's a massive increase in supply, the price can go down. Well, he's standing up there with von Mises, Rothbard, all of the greats. When you have a massive increase in supply, all other things being equal, the price tends to go down. Hold the presses. All right. Even as Bitcoin struggles to maintain stability above 57K, analysts like those at QCP Capital remain hopeful. They observe signs of capitulation among Bitcoin miners, but also note positivity in the options market, suggesting potential for a price recovery. Yeah, I mean, they have people they've told to buy, so they don't want those people to sell, so they say, we're optimistic! Of course, if they have people who have it and they want those people to sell, that they say, not these guys in particular, but just traders as a whole, they say, we're not optimistic, we're pessimistic, it could go down further. So all they're doing is programming people to buy and sell, often for their own benefit. In my humble opinion, don't know. Right, all right, okay. All right, so it's pretty funny. Nobody knows the foundational value proposition is absolutely unprecedented through any time in human history. Then I get a free Bitcoin fraction and can diversify investment and say, silver, not a bad option, or keep $2,000 in Bitcoin and let it ride. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, when it goes down, I'll buy it. Well, I can't buy it now. It's low. Could go lower. Could go lower. Could go up. Could go sideways. Could go to the nether. Could go to the back rooms. Sure. I don't know. All right. Let me get to your comments. You know, I have a vague suspicion that people watch other shows. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I think it's quite true. I do think that people, in fact, watch other shows. I get this weird feeling that there are other shows out there and people are of their own free, voluntary will that they are watching those shows. I'm sure it's just a vicious rumor spread by goblins and orcs, but it does seem to be something that could happen. Peacefulparenting.com, don't forget. Peacefulparenting.com. All right. Let me get to your comments. Steph, what's the best argument for some asshole billionaire can buy up all the Bitcoin? Sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand. Are you trying to say to me, Steph, how can I possibly get the maximum amount of Bitcoin into the stupid paper hands of fucking idiots? Is that your... Steph, how can I convince absolute morons to hold the most scarce and beautiful digital asset in the history of the world? How can I get the Mona Lisa into the hands of a graffiti artist who'll spray cow feces all over that glorious soft smile? How can I get all of the works of Shakespeare into the hands of drooling idiots who will tear out the pages in a bizarre paper airplane fetish in a boarding school? There are absolute idiots who don't understand economics, but Steph, how can I get them to buy Bitcoin? You know, I have this beautiful daughter. Steph, I have this beautiful daughter. How could I possibly get her to date an entire crack-addicted, roid-raging, ultra-violent biker gang? Please, Steph, just tell me how I can get this to happen. Somebody says, some asshole billionaire can buy up all the Bitcoin. You're like, yeah, that's a big problem. You should definitely steer clear of it. Do you know half of my show is bringing people in and half of my show is getting people to go away? That's my life as a whole. Hey, come in. Hey, go away. So why do you want to... Oh, you want to... So you're trolled, right? You're easily trolled. So what you want to, this is a personal issue, right? Somebody says, some asshole billionaire can buy up all the Bitcoin. Yeah. Because it seems to me you're going in a gold rush to the Yukon with some stockings and a bucket. And all of the mouth-breathing, chinless wanderers on the planet are saying, well, I don't know if I want to go to that gold rush, man. And you're like, no, you should really come to the gold rush because I'm an idiot. Yeah, absolutely. You should come and take all the gold out from underneath me. I mean, if you know where the gold is, shut up. Don't talk about it. Hey, you guys got to come to where all the gold is. Oh, you don't want to? No, I've really got to convince you to get to come to where the gold is because apparently I don't want any fucking gold. Please. What are you doing? Yeah, asshole billionaires. Yeah, they could buy up all the Bitcoin, man. That's dangerous. And you should tell your friends and you should tell your friends' friends and you should tell all of the people you know, all of the people you respect, all of the people you think are just brilliant and really understand economics and really understand fiat currency and really understand the national debt and really understand the fall of Rome. You should take all of your friends who couldn't spell Kardashian if you paid them 10 Bitcoin and you should tell them, yes, asshole billionaires can buy up all the Bitcoin. You should totally not get your hands on any. Bitcoin is a beautiful child of brilliance, and you don't hand your beautiful child of brilliance over to mouth-breathing idiots who think billionaires can buy up all the Bitcoin, and then what? Yeah, God, can you imagine if there was a cartel of people that could just borrow against future generations and print whatever the fuck they wanted and manipulate interest rates and just own everything and throw everyone in jail who questioned it? God, can you imagine that? Anyway, all right. A good friend I'm renting with, says someone, has big time mommy issues. Mommy issues is a very derogatory phrase. Now, I may have used it in the past. You know, we grow, we mature, we learn. At least that's the theory. But mommy issues is a term of insult against men who have been severely abused by their mothers. Mommy issues, right? You don't say mother trauma. You don't say he was abused by his caregiver. You say mommy issues. So that is a way of infantilizing men in genuine pain from female predation. It's a way of infantilizing them. And it's a way of saying you'll get no sympathy in this or any other world. So, that's not right. It would be like saying that a woman who's been repeatedly raped has pee-pee issues. Like that's just, it's fucking weird and cold. I'm not saying that you're this person. I'm just saying that the phrase as a whole is weird and cold and harsh, and it is a form of verbal abuse against those who have been severely traumatized as helpless children by the mothers who were supposed to love, care for, and protect them. I would strongly suggest not using this phrase and calling out this phrase, which is a form of abuse, calling out this phrase whenever it is used. It was a phrase invented by women in order to minimize and erase the pain they've inflicted on children. All right. So this good friend I'm renting with has big time mommy issues. His mom, since he was a kid, is in a lot of debit. I assume you mean debt. Please check your typos. From what he's told me, she was terrible at raising him, i.e. never around, letting him overeat as a kid, and verbally abusive. He is littered with health problems and can barely work at $12 an hour job. He has pretty much given up on life and given up as parents, ever accepting they messed up. Would you have any advice on what I might do to help him? Well, first of all, you have to ask one question and one question only. What is the first question you need to ask when these kinds of questions come up? When people say, there's someone who's in real trouble. They're really traumatized. They're failing at life. How do I help them? What's the first question you ask? What is the first question you ask? Thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. People say, there's this guy I really want to help. Why do I have them in my life? Well, it's a roommate, so whatever, right? Why do you care so much? No? I mean, I think we care when we see suffering. Do they even want help? Yeah. Can they be helped? Okay. Just a spitball here. Let's just whiteboard and spitball. Spitball. What percentage of people, when you've tried to help people, what percentage of people have you actually helped? And I mean, in your life, in your family, among your friends. I mean, we all here are founts of wonderful wisdom, and we've tried to bring it to those we care about throughout the course of our lives. So what percentage of people have you been able to help in your personal life? Do we say a man who spent years in solitary confinement in a 3-meter by 3-meter by 3-meter cement cell have small-y space issues? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty good at helping people. Of all of the people, I've tried to help in my personal life dozens of people. I mean, the significant investment, dozens of people. I think the best I've been able to do is help people avoid disaster. But in terms of flourishing, you take someone who's really going down a bad path, and do you get them to a great path with a happy marriage and a great career? And zero! Saved by zero. Yeah, zero. I have got zero. I've helped a few people avoid things getting worse or a real disaster, but maybe I've helped people cut down on cigarettes a bit, but I know it didn't turn anyone into a marathon runner. Zero. There's a terrifying line in my novel, The God of Atheists. A young budding sociopath says, I am what remains when history wins. Number of people who go to therapy, number of people who really do the work, number of people significantly improve in therapy is tiny. It's tiny. So if you can't help people you've had multi-decade close relationships with, can you help a roommate? I mean, I know he's more than a roommate, he's a friend, but you have to look hard at these numbers, man. You got to look hard at these numbers. Say, what are the odds that this person can be helped at all? How many continue helping themselves after you have stopped helping them, right? So let's take something that's easy, because we've got data on this, right? How many people, over the course of their life, just using willpower, how many people over the course of their lives who are overweight, how many people lose weight and keep it off? Percent lose weight and keep it off. And I'm sure there have been studies, right? Percentage who lose weight and keep it off. It's not high. It's not high. So, percentage of lost weight regained for most people a year, 1 year after the weight loss, they've regained 30%. 2 years after weight loss, more than 55% of people have regained all the weight. 3 years after weight loss, 70%. 4 years after weight loss, close to 75%. And 5 years after the weight loss, close to 80% of people have regained the weight. Or percent of lost weight regained, right? I will put this study in the chat. My memory, which of course is obviously imperfect, is that it's 3 to 5% of people who lose weight actually keep it off for their lives. And of those 3 to 5% of those 3 to 5% of people who lose weight, some of them and keep it off, some of them are doing it through some external chemical or, you know, bariatric surgery or something like that, right? According to, from 2013 to 2016, nearly 1 in 2 adults in the U.S. tried to lose weight in the past 12 months. So half of people are trying to lose weight, at least, and that's the ones that they admit to, right? Within 5 years, people tend to regain about 80% of the weight they initially lost, and it just goes on from there. It's just appalling. It's just appalling. I'll put this in too, right? Now, if you look at, everybody wants to lose weight. Everybody gets cheered for losing weight. Everybody's excited to lose weight. You get positive feedback. You get health right away. You get the health benefits. You've got spring in your step. You can run. You can climb stairs. You feel great. And so with all of the amazing immediate positive feedback, there's nobody, if somebody's 50 pounds overweight and loses 25 pounds, there's nobody who says, "You look like crap. I hate you." Like, nobody, right? Everybody's like, "You look fantastic." They're encouraging. They're excited. They're positive about it, right? So that is the reality of change. Even when your doctor tells you to do it, it's fantastically healthy for you to lose the weight. You get benefits. Immediate health benefits, social benefits, reinforcement benefits. Everyone's excited. Everybody praises you. It's the most wonderful thing in the known universe. And even then, only single digits of people can keep it off. I suppose I'm past 5 years. I lost, 20 or 30 pounds, maybe 30 pounds, about 15 years ago. And I'm actually still going down. I was 187, I think, last time I weighed myself. So, But that's just because I know you just have to change everything and never go back. You have to change everything and you can't ever go back. It's just not a temporary thing. Most people are like, it's like holding a balloon underwater. It's like, "Oh, I lost the weight. Oh, great. I can reward myself," right? "You really helped me and my wife get our marriage together. We still have work to do, but if we had not called in, I would definitely not be doing the work I'm doing now to better myself, my wife, and son." Well, congratulations. Thank you. Thank you so much. "Who remembers the show The Biggest Loser? They all got fat quickly after the show ended." Yeah, probably, right? I'm sure I will take what you say and accept it. Have you ever, hit me with a why, if you've ever tried to help people lose weight? Others, not yourself, right? Others. Have you ever tried to help people lose weight? I don't know about the social benefits. You will probably get ostracized by your other obese friends. No, they'll be excited. I mean, they may have some subtle stuff or whatever, right? And those are the ones who lost it to begin with, which is probably also low. Yeah, so these are people who tried to lose weight and did actually lose weight, and then they gain it back. Think of the people who tried to lose weight and don't even lose weight. Is it a lack of consistency and discipline or something else, in your opinion? Right. Well, I don't know. I'm no nutritionist, so this is all just nonsense opinion, but I will tell you why I think people are fat and why they can't lose weight. Because there's an old saying, says most men live lives of quiet desperation. Most people in the world are managing a grim, great fucking black hole of a beast called depression. Most people. And sometimes they manage depression by putting on that clown Joker face. Sometimes they manage their depression with drugs. Sometimes they manage their depression with travel. Sometimes they manage their depression with promiscuity. Sometimes they manage their depression with conformity and politics and hysteria and marching and taking care of the underprivileged. And so they just, but what there is a black hole core void of undertow in most people's lives. And the most common way that people manage their unhappiness is food. The most common way that people manage their unhappiness is food. So if they starve themselves, they feed their unhappiness. And if they don't have food, they won't have a reason to get out of bed. They're that unhappy. So they need the dopamine, they need the fat, they need the salt, they need the sugar. And if they don't get it, their fear is that their unhappiness and their depression will overwhelm them. So they are feeding themselves to keep themselves alive in two ways. Of course, the first way is just to give themselves food so that their body has energy and nutrition. But the second is to stave off catastrophic unhappiness. And if you look at the heaviest people you know, you'll see that they have this undertow of unhappiness that they're fighting. It's like you're being chased relentlessly by a bear. And in order to slow the bear down, you got to turn around and throw candy bars and cake and chips and dip and crap and garbage and chocolate and junk. You got to throw crap food at the bear to slow it down so it doesn't take you down. And the idea that you can lose the weight and keep it off without dealing with and confronting the underlying Pac-Man soul-crunching demon beast of unhappiness is the greatest fantasy. And this is why people, they white knuckle. Okay, I'll stop eating. Okay, I'll do this. Okay, I'll do that. And then the beast emerges because the beast is kept at bay through dopamine. And the dopamine that should come from morality and satisfaction and virtue and goodness and honesty and truth and integrity, that dopamine, which is the good shit, well, people aren't getting it from virtue, and they're not getting it from honesty, and they're not getting it from integrity, so they have to get it from food, or video games, or pornography, or what. They don't love their lives, they don't love themselves, they don't respect themselves, they don't do the kind of good that they claim They have taken the appearance of virtue rather than the substance of actual material improvement. They inspire no one, least of all themselves. They're petty, often mean, malicious, hot-tempered, mean-tempered, vainglorious. They embody so many of the COVID-spiky seven sins that they're like absolutely startled combination hedgehogs and octopi. They're lonely, isolated. They are willing themselves to not see the carnivorous passage of time that, like a cloud of piranhas, is stripping the flesh of the future from their bones. They're terrified of the world. They're terrified of the future. Most of their fears are artificial, and the genuine fears they should have, they wave away as prejudice, bigotry, and fear-mongering. So they're afraid of the weather in 100 years, but not of the slow, aching collapse of their own civilization or bones all around them. And they feed themselves to fill up the emptiness. So I don't think it's a lack of consistency and discipline. They are being chased by a relentless beast that they must constantly sacrifice their health in order to appease. The beast of unhappiness, the beast of self-abandonment, the beast of blame, the beast of isolation, the beast of slithering and skidding along the lowest possible plane, the flatland plane of their own low expectations, to avoid any airstrikes from the powers that be and the giant dinosaur legs that thunder and crash above them. And, of course, for women in particular, though a lot of men as well, their flesh was used to torture them as children, and the flesh demands dopamine because life is pain for them, particularly children and particularly girls who were raped, sexually assaulted, molested, and attacked sexually as children. They cannot be beautiful, they cannot be attractive, they cannot manage being desired, they cannot manage being sexy, they cannot manage drawing the male gaze. You say, the male gaze. No, no, that's the pedophile's gaze. The male gaze. It's the pedophile's gaze. And they have to bury their bones and flesh because they were buried under the paw prints of a pedophile. Often as children, and not confronting that and not dealing with that, which I sympathize with, of course, as I sympathize with all of this. Let's get your comments here. Lockdowns and high crime don't encourage fresh air and exercise. Closing public beaches, parks, and playgrounds. Yep. Steph, the way you describe dysfunctional people is totally chilling. I say it with empathy. My wife is a friend who is massively overweight, gets sick almost weekly, and his flat is a hoarder's black hole. It's horrifying to walk into. She tried to help him, but he wouldn't take any advice. She's had to distance herself now. Yeah, you can't. You know, sometimes the demons just get their... You know, if the demons catch your hair, you can lose your hair, right? If the demons catch your earlobe, you can lose your earlobe. If the demons catch your skin, you can lose some part of your skin. But if they get their claws into your spine, you're caught and you're going down and you just grab at other people to slow your descent, but you'll take them with you eventually. Joe says, I'd say Steph is right. I remember when I was feeling crappy about life, I had to go and get a hamburger to make me feel better. Not anymore. I know the feeling, says someone. Depression has you asking, is happiness and joy the lie and being miserable and alone the real me? Nasty. I remember you talked about this topic at the Bomb of the Brain series with an interview with Dr. Felitti of the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study here. Yeah. Oh, the way I describe dysfunctional people, he does it with such accuracy, it's amazing to witness. Well, you don't think I've had my own black holes to seal and heal? Yeah, this is some experience. This is experience. Being overweight or obese is partially telling yourself that you won't live a long life and will likely die early, and only the present matters. Sure. Sure. It's our selected, right? I did the whole truth about hedonism recently. So it's our selected. Somebody says, I read Exit the Maze after listening to your episode with the writer. It explains this pretty well, in my opinion. Well, good. I'm glad. Glad it was helpful. Food takes the place of a wrecked or abandoned set of virtues. When you give up on that which can generate love and being loved, when you give up on virtues, right, everybody has a virtue-shaped hole in their heart who pursues these kinds of addictions. Once you've had virtue, cheesecake isn't that great. Once you've had genuine love, bag of chips isn't that great. I view addiction as an attempt to escape the demands of virtue, which I understand. But if you try to escape the demands of virtue, you will have to find your dopamine somewhere else. You link everything together so well. Well, I'm glad. Being overweight is a survival mechanism. Yeah, because food has to replace the dopamine that was stripped from you through child abuse. And not to make everybody who's overweight just a mere victim of child abuse, but also because we evolved in a society, and this is true of most societies around the world, and increasingly becoming true of our society in the West, or at least the smoking cradle-laced remnants of it. We evolved in a society where virtue was suicidal. And I don't mean that allegorically. I mean that literally and directly. Virtue was suicidal. To question the witch doctor, to question the virtue and value of the king, to oppose the brutal people in charge of children, to oppose the indoctrination, to question the lies. Was death. Virtue is death. Integrity is self-destruction. Morality is suicide. Questions are only answered with the direct blade of death or the genetic blade of ostracism. The pay for the skeptical is not gold, but steel and iron. Guillotines, hangings, beheadings, ostracisms, duels. So many people have a separate social media just posting the food they eat. Yeah. And there is a very, I mean, to me, the saddest thing about the women, I'm sure there are men who do it, but I've only seen the women. Sometimes Hispanic, it seems a little bit more than common, or more than you would expect. But the women, what they do is they, you know, here's what I eat in a day, right? And they go through this conveyor belt of absolute trash and garbage. You know, brightly colored, sugary, laced with chemicals and preservatives and drizzled with icing sugar and, you know, I don't know, French toast and, you know, and occasionally they eat fruit and so on, and maybe a little bit of salad, but the salad is greased up and laced with crap on top. And it's always just like, you know, this smirky kind of, oh, isn't this good? You can't stop me. Look how good it is, right? That to me is it's the equivalent of a kind of demonic possession. Yeah, it's just appalling. And there's an old line from Seinfeld that I always thought was quite clever, where George, the sort of tubby short guy, he starts wearing sweatpants. And Jerry says, you know what sweatpants say to me? They say, I give up. I'm never going to be attractive, so I might as well be comfortable. Or the fat guy in the subway sitting across from Jerry Seinfeld, and he's like, I'm not ashamed. And he's like, but you should be. You should be ashamed. That's shameful. So it is despair, foundationally. Despair for the future, so why be there? It's a hatred of the parents, so I'll make myself fat, greasy, neck-bearded, and unattractive, so screw the family line. It's an act of rage against the boomers, and to some degree, my generation, Gen X, which is to say, I'm not going to get a fucking job, I'm not going to get out of the basement, I'm not going to leave the computer, I'm not going to continue the line. Now I'm kind of hungry for a greasy salad. Dear, oh dear, I have no problem with jokes, but you know, we're talking about some really dark stuff here, right? And you putting in a joke shows only your discomfort, which I sympathize with, but try not to spread it to others. Somebody says, Ali says, my family never referred to me as having any sexual value at all. I was inexplicably, to me, invisible. I inwardly doubted them, but the objective truth appeared they were right. Food is my only intimacy and satisfaction. The objective truth appeared they were right. So you are what they call a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, this is all kind of bad, you know, like, but it can be good. I always thought I was destined for great things. I am manifesting the self-fulfilling prophecy of Uber Steph. Because if it hadn't worked out, I'd probably be driving an Uber. So, there's nothing wrong with a self-fulfilling prophecy if your prophecy is elevated and you work to achieve it. But the self-fulfilling prophecy is like the guy, he's like, oh man, you know, my girlfriend, she's going to leave me, man. She's going to leave me. She's way too good for me. Like, she's going to leave me. I mean, I love her. I love her. I absolutely love her and I worship her, but there's no way she's going to stick around with me. Oh, she's going to leave me. I got to stick in there. I'm going to stick in there, but I know she's going to leave me. And then you get worried and nervous and low status and you check your girlfriend's phone and you're paranoid and you're worried. Hey, look at that. And she left you. Right. Self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like the problems of the mouse utopia and civilization as a whole, right? It's a story that man builds a big fence around the farm to keep the bears, coyotes out. And then, after decades of no bears, no wolves, no coyotes, people are like, his wife is like, hey man, he built this fence to keep me in. He's keeping me prisoner. And then she goes out of the fence and gets eaten by bears and wolves and coyotes. All right. If you let evil people define your essence, you've lost. It's a voluntary surrender. Nobody gets through the doors of your adult mind without you opening them. Everything is changed from the inside. But if you let evildoers define your essence into adulthood, you have voluntarily surrendered. I mean, you have given up the ghost. You are what remains when history wins. The bad people have won. You are conquered territory. The flag of Satan flies over the smoky crater of your former soul, and you have surrendered. If it's any consolation, most people do, but you don't have to. It's that Italian proverb, at the end of the game, both the king and the pawn go into the same box, but it still matters how you play. Somebody says, I really need to make philosophy and virtue the number one priority in my life. With everything else I have going on in my life, feeding that ambition. It's been something I've only pursued very loosely, all while knowing how good it will be for me and those I'll love in the future. Right, so you know, the ultimate propaganda against virtue is you'll be alone. You'll be alone. Nobody will like you. You'll be alone. You'll be rejected. You'll be isolated. You'll die alone, woo, woo, with a dog, Kevin Samuels style, right? So this is why everybody who's involved in punishing you for being virtuous is setting a deep fire in the inferno that is consuming the world. What did I say? Backwards Hat Steph was going to cook tonight. Got my laptop smoking right now. Thank you, Stefan. This is immensely valuable. I'm glad to help. I've seen a short clip of one of those huge women filming their eating addiction. It was so sad and repulsive. It was like watching a person cut themselves with a razor. Right. So in my view, all of the people who are normalizing illness wish to continue preying on children, right? So if you look at a fat person, and in particular a fat woman, if you look at her and you say you were most likely sexually abused as a child, then a lot of sexual abuse is going to come out. So all of the pedophiles, what they want to do is they want to normalize obesity so that people don't ask about the dysfunction and uncover the pedophilia, right? Dinner was hamburger with mac and cheese, side of cucumber. Try to limit the bad stuff. Dinner was leftover, spending about $8 in food over several days. Or for $30, I could order junk food from delivery service. Choices are the name of the game. Yeah, obviously I have sympathy for the people, and we all are facing this, the massively high prices of groceries, but when you see, oh, this is what $100 of groceries buy you, it's all packaged, multidimensional, polysyllabic. I mean, it sounds like an ancient Aramaic priest is having a stroke when you read the ingredients. It's like speaking in tongues if the tongues are satanic licking of depositing fat into your arteries. All right, questions, comments, issues, challenges. Probably not going to do a late show tonight. I just woke up super early this morning. Not a common thing for me. And, you know, normally I just roll over, go back to sleep or whatever. But for this morning, my brain was cooking and I ended up getting up early and doing a review of the Anti-Subjectivist Manifesto, which was sent to me some time ago. And it's an argument. It's a moral argument. And so I spent just under an hour going through the first couple of pages. And, you know, it's funny because some of the stuff that I like the most, I'm not sure how it lands for the audience, but for me, picking apart arguments and looking at the use of language and seeing what commitments are made, what assumptions are made, how things are communicated is fantastic and all of that, right? Yeah, some guy, Avocado, is that right? Fat YouTuber who calls himself eating like 3 pizzas, all the junk food imaginable. Yeah, he started, I saw a documentary, a little short documentary on him, and he started off slender, and he just has completely pigged out. Self-fulfilling prophecies should be called fulfilling parents and abusers' prophecies. Yeah, I mean, it's giving up. I remember reading stories of adventure stories, drama in real life in the Reader's Digest, and people would be like, well, you know, the cold was so getting so bad, I just lay back and I gave up. I gave up. To me, I'm not a give up kind of guy. I just can't picture that. I can't imagine that. You fight till you can't fight anymore. Fight till you can't. Any update to the History of Philosophy series? Any new episodes lined up? Joe, why are you trying to distract people from the topic at hand? Oh, I did a response to Andrew Wilson's incest argument. Yeah, that's going to be volatile as hell. So I don't know, we'll put that out maybe over the weekend or next week. probably be donor only. It's a very volatile argument, easily prone to misunderstanding. And of course, it is such a repulsive topic. The topic is, does incest violate, does consensual incest, brother or sister who are adults, does it violate the non-aggression principle? And so I have an answer. This live stream has been amazing. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. To what extent do you try to get along with people when you haven't found virtuous people? Does that change when you have children? The only people I will hang out with are virtuous people. So I'm friendly to everyone. Like my daughter rolls her eyes. Like I was getting coffee the other day and I was chatting with the guy behind the counter about his trip up north and where he went. And because I know quite a lot about Northern Ontario because I worked up there and all of that. And I'm like friendly and positive. I always, unless, you know, there's something really negative going on, but I will always try to leave someone slightly better than I found them. And so I'm friendly to everyone. I wish everyone, absolutely everyone, the best. And I do, but I don't hang out with people who are corrupt. I can't. And I could spot them a zillion miles away, right? So don't give in without a fight. Yeah. Early morning here too. Hour 13. 8 in a clinic. Re an ongoing health issue. No rest here. Glad to end the night on a high note. Gosh, what's going on? Did you mention this before? What's going on with your health issue? I'm so sorry about that. Yeah, I got into an interesting conversation with someone some months ago, just a flyby, and he was describing, his mother died when he was younger, and he's describing it, and I was like, they have questions about this story. And we sort of went down. She's like, oh, yeah, wait, this story doesn't hang together. I'm like, ooh, talk about kicking over a corpse, right? If you have an evil boss, but you can still function in your job, should you quit? Are you serving evil? I mean, if it's a good organization, but an evil boss, then you're still doing good in the organization. But why not just gather information about your boss and get him fired? I could make a case in case of pregnancy, it harms the child genetically. Yeah, of course, absolutely. But the sexual activity, if you say that there's no pregnancies, right? So yes, of course, right? But then, of course, if you're going to say the genetic stuff, then what about, is it a violation of the non-aggression principle for people who have genetic susceptibilities to have children? Right? I mean, it does get complicated. So I needed an answer for that, which didn't involve just that, because that's a wider issue. You know, let's say that you work in some organization that really helps sick and poor people and helps them get back on their feet and so on, and you have a mean boss. Well, you can still help the people, right? But in generally, there's always someone above your boss, right? And even if your boss is the CEO, there's shareholders, right? There's other stakeholders in the organization. There's nobody who's the final boss. And so there's always someone above that you can appeal to in order to hopefully get something. Now, if the whole organization is corrupt all the way to the very top, I personally wouldn't stay, because then promotion is just promotion to evil. In fact, you won't get promoted if your boss is evil. Like, you're going to be stuck in your position, right? Any other tips, comments, issues, questions? I think we've had a great show so far, and I really do appreciate everybody's time and attention tonight. It is lovely to see you. But we have a low donation night tonight, which is not the end of the world. I know, things are tough out there. But if you can help out the show, freedomain.com/donate is the best way to do it. But I am happy with whatever works best for you. All right, I have a question. Oh, look at that. Bitcoin went up a little bit since we started. I'm sure entirely because of us. Just kidding. I don't think that. Could be, though. Entrepreneur is the final boss, but a good man. Yeah, except he's not the final boss because he's reliant upon customers. All right, questions are not flowing. Donations are not flowing, although Philosophy is flowing, so I will just wait for another second or two more in case anybody has a last question or comment. Otherwise, I will bid you a glorious and gorgeous good night. And don't forget, we are talking Sunday, 11 a.m. Oh, you're fighting an infection again? I'm sorry about that, man. I really am. That's very sad. Steph, that conversation you had with the guy who accused Jared of unprofessional behavior was amazing. Yeah. Yeah, Jared handled himself perfectly in that. I have no issues with that. It was a great convo, right? Is there anything wrong with feeling indifferent to evil people? That question's too abstract. I don't know what anything wrong, I don't know what that means. I am indifferent to most evil people because I don't even know them. So if they have power over me, that's a different matter. You shouldn't be indifferent to people who are evil and have power over you. But, I mean, there are lots of evil, mean, nasty people out there. Sometimes you pass them by and sometimes you hear them snarling at others. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to rush to people's defense if they can't be bothered to defend themselves, right? I'm happy to help people with their self-defense, but not substitute. I can't defend people any more than I can digest for them. But you can help them with their own self-defense if that's what they want. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for a glorious evening. I really do appreciate it. Look at that. The techie tech worked, which is nice. Have yourself a glorious evening, and I hope that you have a lot of fun on Saturday. We will talk to you guys Sunday. And, oh, one last thing, just before I forget. Hit me with a why if you would be interested in a meetup in Florida. If you would be interested in a meetup in Florida. Specifically my parents, I feel apathetic towards them. I blocked them finally and felt nothing, not a slither of emotion. That's probably not super healthy. Yes, just hit me with a why if you would be interested in a meetup in Florida. Land of the land sharks. Where you cannot go and catch frogs because the dinosaurs will catch you. So I'll put a poll out. But yeah, it could be fun, right? It could be fun. Could be fun. Thank you, A. Thank you, A. Thank you, A. What's that guy in Battlestar Galactica who plays Colonel Ty? I was like, turning to my wife when we were watching it. It's like, that guy's from Northern Ontario. I recognize that accent. I'd recognize that accent if I was in a coma. And lo and behold, he was. Land of humidity and soon to be humility. Mar-a-Lago, no. Oh, good. Good. Okay. Looks like people are interested in that. Okay. I will pursue that. Meet up with Viva Frey. I like Viva Frey. Who's in? Viva Frey's in Florida. Redhead Libertarian, is she in Florida? I think she's in Florida. I think she moved there. But not Mike C. All right. Have yourself a wonderful evening, everyone. Thank you so much. We will talk to you Sunday. Bye.